Welcome to Dorkness to Nightmare.
This is a mini-sode mini-series that will take a look at monsters and what they have to say about humanity.
We're Alan and Em, and welcome to Dorkness to Light. This is the fourth of our October minisodes, which we are calling Dorkness to Nightmare. That was by request, actually.
It was. And this time around, we are going to be doing a little bit of a potpourri episode, talking about a variety of monsters, which all can be grouped together into a single category. They are the restless undead.
You know, all of these seem to be talking about the big questions of what is life and does it continue in some manner after death? And let's start with the one that involves the spirit sticking around after the body has gone, and that is the ghost.
So a lot of times ghosts fit into kind of two broad categories. That there are the unfinished business ghosts, the person or people that have something to do before they can move on and get some closure. And then the other is the strong emotion ghost, which is maybe a little less of a person and more just an echo or a memory of a person or an event that happened in some place.
For the unfinished business ghost, I think of Aragorn's Army of the Dead in the Lord of the Rings movie.
Yeah, the Dead Men of Dunharrow.
Where they were restless because they were oathbreakers. And then this was some sort of penance to follow their king, do battle for him, and then actually still he had to release them from their bond. But there was a
contract.
You have to finish this. So to me, that's sort of a classic example of the unfinished business ghost. And that is one that you see a lot in movies and pop culture. There's the, I can't move on to the next level because of something holding you back, usually a relationship or whatever it is. Or again, some sort of unfinished business, including identifying my killer.
That's a good one. Or in the case of the Spectre, stopping all evil everywhere.
You know, sometimes, you know, the perspective between God and man, I think sometimes there can be a little miscommunication. You know, to God, you know, that's really a job that doesn't take all that long.
Yeah, just like stop evil. It's fine.
It wouldn't be all that hard. But to poor Jim Corrigan, that was a heck of a bargain he struck. Would Dead Man fit in here as well?
I think it would perfectly fit into this of try and find your killer. And in the process, solve crime.
And with comic books, there's been so many different takes and reboots and versions of Dead Man. I imagine there's probably one where he does find the killer. I don't know if then he goes on in that version in that else world. Does get a happy ever after. But that's the classic one of him sticking around to figure out who killed him. Every time we mention Dead Man, we have to say we do want him in the DC TV universe, specifically so John Constantine can try to cast him out of someone who's acting a little oddly.
And or get possessed by him, because I really want to see...
Oh, my lance.
I really want to see Matt Ryan do a very bad American accent. I'd be very here for this. But that is one type. And in the other, the sort of emotional imprint ghost. This one's actually pretty different because these ghosts are not necessarily people. That this sort of tends to lead into haunted objects and places where the person themselves either ended or went somewhere and then some sort of memory or residue is left behind. And this is the premise of a lot of the ghost hunting shows.
Right.
Maybe not necessarily to solve this person's unfinished business, but to just figure out
what the trauma might be that's hanging around.
What sort of, I keep coming back to the word residue, what sort of
psychic, ectoplasmic
energy or whatever that might be hanging around in an area and either dispelling it or just sort of recognizing it and being like, it's here, but it'll fade eventually.
Right. And I think that's where you get, you know, sort of classically, in the negative sense of horror films, that's where you get haunted houses or haunted objects where there's usually been violence or abuse or murder or some type of terrible thing has happened and that has left such an emotional imprint on the place or the object.
That's an interesting sort of metaphysical concept because it's saying that something emotional or mental can impact the physical world, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's almost as if the room or the object, whatever it is, you know, it can be something totally standard and normal, you know, a hairbrush or whatever it is that almost has a memory.
And you pointed out that when we were talking about the dead, ghosts are possibly the least crazy thing that we have covered thus far in this miniseries.
I think so. In some weird way, we're allowed to say this because it's a religious podcast. I'm not saying, I'm just saying. There may be a bit of truth that we're glimpsing here. And when you think about all of these sort of negative versions, these hauntings, to me there's the flip side of it, which is of holy relics and holy shrines and holy places. We've talked about liminal spaces before.
Right, where and sort liminal of spaces are not always bad.
Exactly, exactly. And I think, you know, we're told that we are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. You know, all of the Christian believers who've gone on before. We are in some way in community with them. And is there a way that on occasion they can poke through and have an impact in some way, physically or spiritually? In the early church, that model of where the martyr was killed, that becomes a place of remembrance and visitation. And you're getting some of that strong emotion maybe being tied to this place, whether it's cause and effect.
Right.
You know, maybe all of the prayers and all of the pilgrimages in some way make this a place of liminal space, you know, where that veil is narrower.
This also ties into some theories about purgatory and specifically sort of what happens between death and resurrection, that if one believes that physical bodily resurrection will happen at some point, well, how much time exists between those and where is the spirit in the meantime? Is it just floating around on Earth somewhere? There's a lot of theories about what happens to the spirit in that in-between space in your personal or systematic theology.
Right. I mean, one of the arguments against all of these things, against ghosts or even against sort of the saintly types of things that I'm considering is a verse in Hebrews, which is pretty clear. It's appointed once for someone to die, and then after that is the judgment. And I always say, well, hold on. We don't know what you're saying. How long is the after that? And,
right.
And what is happening between those two words?
Mm-hmm.
We just don't know. And this is a case of our Catholic sisters and brothers who have a very formalized, established structure for honoring the heroic dead, virtuous dead through the process of sainthood. You know, there is some idea. I mean, we ask saints to pray for us. And again, that's when I say we.
Sort of generally.
You know, and the idea is that they can pray. We ask them to pray for us. Is that all they can do? Is all that they can do within the spiritual realm? Or are there things that they can do? And technically speaking, for one to become a Catholic saint, a miracle has to be involved, which then implies some sort of connection. Some sort of impact on our side of the veil. And to me, that's just weird and fascinating and kind of cool to think about. It's just cool.
It's really cool. That Hebrews verse just does give kind of a bit of flexibility. A thing that annoys me a lot about biblical literalists is they don't want by definition, don't want to be flexible, even when the literal reading of the text can be very flexible or can lend itself to a lot of flexibility. If people in Protestant circles say, well, that's proof that there is no sainthood because you die and then the judgment. And then you're like, well, what about the time period? And they're like, well, in between you just sleep. That there is no perception, there is no intercession, there is no involvement, there's no awareness, there's no nothing. You die, and then you wake up at judgment, and then you move on to a spiritual existence in heaven, or however that works. But to sleep, perhaps to dream, are there undead, quote-unquote, sleepwalkers? A few people who maybe slip through and move stuff, and et cetera, maybe haunt a couple of old houses.
I think it's possible. And I think all of this sort of leads into one of our favorite little, places where we take a stand, and that's the religious and Christian and Catholic aspects of Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the entire season, all of this Halloween times, all of... for some of us, the last week of October or all of October, or for your roommate, the 12 months leading up to October.
It's always virtually. It's always pre-Halloween, and then it's Halloween, and then it's pre-Halloween again.
However you describe the Halloween season, it's all preliminary. It's all preview for All Saints Day and All Souls Day. So this is not a stretch. There is a connection there. In terms of ghost stories, well, they are kind of everywhere.
Yeah, there's 100 million of them.
The Sixth Sense as an obvious one. The Haunted Tank comic. Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm. Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Ghost. One of the ones I read was a terrible Casper the Friendly Ghost knockoff comic. Timmy the Timid Ghost.
Oh, terrible.
Yes, it was. Of course, many, many, many horror films focus on the haunted aspect.
The haunting of haunted ghosts, all the poltergeist movies. Next, we wanted to talk a little bit about zombies.
Kind of the opposite, if you think about it. If you consider the ghost the spirit left behind after the body goes, zombies are pretty much...
the body with no spirit. Mm-hmm. And originally, this linked into voodoo practice.
Right.
But what we generally think of as a zombie was basically created whole cloth by George Romero. And that has been the template. Like with Bram Stoker and vampires, this is the zombie.
Mm-hmm.
The unkillable, relentless, thoughtless monster that is coming for your flesh, but mostly your brains.
There is something kind of heroic about trying to fight that off, about not giving in to the hopelessness. Maybe the zombie story is about hope. I mean, I don't know that they find cures in many of those stories.
Mm-hmm. It's very much a perspective. Like with many of these monsters, you get out sort of what you put in to the monster. Because, do you want to take your vampires and make them sympathetic? Well, that says something about how you view human nature or the nature of morality and questions of good and evil. With zombies, the way that you perceive them and the way that you think society would go after it, would it go full Walking Dead? Utter hopelessness. There is no way out. It is unending. It is just pure nihilism on the page. Or is it going to go the direction of one of my favorite zombie stories, which is the book World War Z?
Mm. Well, technically, we should probably say the audiobook of World War Z.
Which is fantastic, and I highly recommend.
In terms of World War Z, audiobook A, book B, movie C?
Minus.
Okay.
My biggest problem with the movie is not necessarily that it's a bad zombie movie, but that it is a typical zombie movie. Yeah. Whereas the great thing about World War Z is that the whole book is about resistance.
Right.
And that, spoilers, in the end, resistance pays off.
Yeah.
They don't find a cure, and it doesn't ever really stop, but humanity bands together. They survive. They dig in. And they have to do some horrible stuff to get there. There's a lot of short stories in there about madness and cannibalism and terrible hard decisions and murder and vivisection and all sorts of terribleness. But in the end, the world is starting to rebuild itself. And yes, every spring, some zombies coming back, and you have to be very vigilant in the spring. Make sure that you're always armed. Make sure you go out and do your sweeps. Be very careful before you go out in the woods. But humanity carries on. Mm-hmm. And people have picnics, and they raise children, and the world begins to recover. It very much is human nature. How do you think human right. nature responds to relentlessness mm-hmm. and to nihilism and the inevitability of death? When you can take death and put it on two legs and send it running after you, how do you think humanity responds?
Or would you rather it come shambling slowly after you? Do you have a preference?
I prefer shamblers.
Yes.
Personally, I see why the action movie fast zombies work for some people, yes. but they are action movies. They are not horror movies. And I feel that by removing that sort of inexorable dread, you lose some of what makes zombies unique.
Yeah, and that's what you get with a well-told zombie story, is that sense, as you said, of dread, because there's so many just terrifying elements of it, whether it is being eaten alive, the disease /
infection.
Epidemic, sort of those. There's something uncontrollable, unstoppable about it, like a weather event, tornado or a hurricane or a blizzard. Your best intentions, your best efforts, it is bigger than you. They are stronger than you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need to sleep. You need to eat. You need to... They don't.
Yes.
They keep coming.
And it is a true question of survival. It is a thing that you cannot reason with, and you cannot stop, you cannot fight, you have to simply outlast. Mm-hmm. And the question is whether or not you can. And speaking of wintry, unstoppable, terrifying, flesh-eating monsters, I want to put a little pin in this from our episode about Thaumatrope. And talk about Wendigos for just mm-hmm. a few minutes. I love the concept of a Wendigo for the same reason that I love the concept of the zombie. But it manages to take, I think, the things that make a zombie scariest, which is the flesh eating and the consumption and the endless hunger, and combine it with the intelligence, or at the very least cunning, of the vampire. I just think like Wendigos are like the coolest, most terrifying monster. And as just tied to the specificity mm-hmm. of winter and starvation and right. death and survival, I think it's a really, really cool monster. And I wanted to take a moment and also shout out to them. Full disclosure, the first monster that I wanted to talk about when I pitched this series was Wendigos.
And but we just had to figure out a way and a place and sort of categorizing. That is why we have some sort of oddball mixes and matches in this episode and in a few future episodes.
But we got to talk about Wendigos a little bit yes. more in Thaumatrope than I expected we would. True. And so I just wanted to bring them back into this as those sort of unstoppable, hungry, undead, ravenous, you know, restless, undead creatures.
Well, I wanted to give a shout out to the creatures in the TV show Wynonna Earp. And I don't know the details of these beings in the graphic novel version of the story by Beau Smith, the manliest man in comics.
Indeed.
At least in the TV show version, the revenants in that are sort of a combination of ghost and demon. I mean, they were people who were alive at a certain point in time, then were killed and went to hell. And now under certain circumstances with family curses and all that, they all come back. And then have to be killed again, go to hell. So there's a hell demonic aspect to it, but also the ghostly coming back. Mm-hmm. And there is a sense of the unfinished business is of the Earp family line that has to dispatch all of these at a certain time and all of that. That's the premise of it.
Interesting.
But yeah, I was kind of halfway putting them here, halfway counting them as demons, so...
that is the question of, well, okay, so if these spirits are coming back from somewhere, where did they go? Mm, and in this particular case, it's saying, well, they went to hell and then have escaped.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an interesting
take
on...
That gives them a heck of an incentive to not get killed again.
Yes.
In this time frame. I read a similar story, a series of comics called Snake Woman by an Indian, which is to say the Nation of India, comic book company. And it had to do with Hindu aspects of cycles of reincarnation. But a similar idea that if there was a terrible act done a couple hundred years ago, and now the succeeding generations, if the ancestors of the original victim can kill the ancestors of the original villains within one generation, the curse is ended. So there's a ghost/reincarnation. Again, it has this other religious culture aspect to it, which is interesting as well. Not the world's greatest comics, but pretty interesting comics.
Cool. A few other oddball kind of things that we wanted to talk about were, you know, since we're here, zombies and voodoo and reincarnation and Hinduism. Let's talk about mummies.
Obviously, we identify mummies with Egypt, and they're probably the most famous mummies. We can argue why or why that wouldn't be, but just a little bit of research disclosed that many, many cultures have various versions of mummification rituals and
and things like that for various religious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases it's, well, the body needs to be intact because the spirit can only exist as long as the body is intact. Mm-hmm. For the Egyptian religion and like Kemetism, something that's interesting is that there is this idea that the spirit and the body are connected.
Yes.
Not because the spirit will return to the body on earth, but because the body will join the spirit in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just sort of an interesting concept, and why it's so important to make sure that the body doesn't break down is
right.
You're still going to need that.
Right.
I want to do a whole episode at some point, maybe with a guest, but I really want to talk about the Egyptian afterlife because
yes.
It is super cool. The way that the Egyptian spirit is conceptualized, that it's not just the body and the spirit, but it's there are all of these elements that make up who you are as a person, some of them physical, some of them spiritual, and some of them metaphysical. In Kemetism, it is possible to have ghosts. There are spirits that will become untethered from their body, or they weren't prepared properly,
right.
And so the spirit can't find its body, and it just wanders. But very rarely does the body get up and move around without the spirit.
Yes.
That is a completely Hammer horror.
Yes.
Like, creation.
Yes, mummies... In the world of mummy movies, mummies are the great exception.
Right.
As opposed to zombies, hordes, or packs of werewolves, or armies of ghosts. Mummies tend to be individual, singular, perhaps if there's a spouse, a relationship, two people.
Maybe, but you don't get a lot of mummies even in mummy movies. It is usually the mummy.
Mm-hmm. I did want to throw one more bit of theology sort of here at the end for us to consider a little bit. And that is, and it's something we have to consider even if we're thinking about Christian Catholic conceptions of saints and effects and all of those things. And that is, to what extent are we comfortable theologically with the separation of body and soul or body and spirit? And at some point, do you get too close to the legit heresy of Gnosticism?
Okay.
And that, to me, is what Christian versions of this really have to wrestle with.
Yeah. There's some interesting stuff to think about as far as what makes a person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people, some Protestants, some Catholics, some atheists would say, well, it's your internals.
Mm-hmm.
It's your soul or your spirit or your memory. You know, this is a thing of some people being like, we want to be able to upload our consciousness,
right.
Because
singularity
that is how you will survive.
That's the emphasis.
But then there are questions of, well, how much of your personhood is actually tied to your body? If you leave your body behind, are you still a mm-hmm. whole being? Theologically, there's a lot of questions there about does your soul go with your mind or does your soul go with your body? Mm-hmm. To bring this all back to literally episode one, Frankenstein. Where right. does your spirit mm-hmm. live? What is the ineffable, internal, immortal part of your being? And what happens to it after it dies? Can it get stuck on Earth? And if it gets stuck on Earth, can it ever get out?
Right.
There's some stuff there. Gnosticism would say that you are purely a spirit.
Who temporarily inhabited a dirty, low, fallen body.
Essentially, we are all ghosts in the machine of right. the physical world. And that eventually, the best thing that can happen to you is to right. die and to get free of this terrible mortal world. But that's not consistent with incarnation theology. Incarnation mm-hmm. theology says that living is good, that bodily physicality is a good and beautiful thing. That gets us back to those questions of what happens to you after you die. Is the plan to go to heaven? Is the plan to come back? And what sort of time frame does mm-hmm. that existence exist on? Because once you die, you essentially enter God time, which right. is to say non-time. What does that look like? I mean, we're getting into some string theory here. I mean, but like, even, nobody knows.
Even if we're attempting to stick to what maybe sort of orthodox Christianity might teach, you have some pretty weird topics. Glorified body. Mm-hmm. We can use those two words together, and we can nod and pretend like we understand what that is, but we don't. Mm-mm. And the word new earth as well. New heaven and new earth. What exactly does that mean? I mean, I think human spirits' time in heaven is actually limited. The eventual place is back on earth. A new earth.
A better
with
earth.
With new bodies. And that leads to very interesting theology in terms of stewardship of the earth and so on, and responsibilities to your body and what exactly that means. And this is why cremation versus burial is something that gets thought about, and how exactly all of that works. Once you sort of start down this path, it branches and branches and branches. I think it's all interesting and fascinating stuff.
But it is nice occasionally to think to ourselves, nobody has this figured out.
Yes.
We can say that we have it yes. figured out, or you can say that you believe in ghosts. But the problem is that as soon as you say, I believe in ghosts, that opens 100,000 new questions about where they come from, where they go, what happens on the in-between. It just goes down long branching pathways. And it's just sort of, I don't know, it's comforting to me to just sort of throw my hands up and be like, nobody knows. Yeah, mm-hmm. we'll find out eventually.
There is a very, very, very obscure Christian band. So obscure that maybe Christopher Ouellette has not heard of them.
I find this unlikely, but carry on.
Called Street Angel. And their song, The Blood, contains the line, it's been said for years that death is a friend of God, but death is Jesus' enemy, the last to be downtrod. If death is the final enemy, then life is, to use our phrase from Tolkien, fighting the long defeat. The fight for life is real, but it will end. You know, in sports, sometimes you hear the phrase, Father Time is undefeated. And with a very, very, very few biblical examples, death is undefeated as well.
Come back for the next episode of Dorkness to Nightmare. The ringing of the bell commands you.
While you're waiting for the next podcast episode, check out our websites. Dorknesstolight.blogspot.com contains reviews, essays, and other similar ramblings.
And dorknesstolight.tumblr.com, which contains some of that material, as well as top tens, cool photographs, memes, and religious puns. We also run a general interest comic book podcast network, Relatively Geeky. That content can be found at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com.
Let us know what you think of this topic, this episode, or this podcast in general. Feel free to send your thoughts to us at dorknesstolight dorkness@gmail.com. We would also appreciate any ratings or reviews left for the podcast in the iTunes store to help like-minded people find us.
Our intro, outro, and promo music is by Anderson Kale. Check them out at andersonkale.com or search iTunes to purchase their music.
Thanks for listening.